Welcome into another edition of NBA Sound System. Gil McGregor here with my guy, Kyle Irving. No targets on our back. We want the target in front of us. We want to see the target. And Kyle knows I'm quoting the head coach of the defending champion Boston Celtics, Joe Mazzulla. One of the biggest, best quotes from a busy offseason. And we'll talk a little bit about the offseason that was. Of course, we have the WNBA playoffs to get through. But the NBA season will be here before you know it. Before we get into all of that good stuff, Kyle, how you doing, man?
Are you sure you don't want to talk about football like we did last week? Because, like, I don't know. I mean, you know, I'm just going to throw it out there that, like, no particular reason, but I'm kind of in the mood to talk about some football if you want to. I mean, no, I'm just kidding. We already did the football episode. We don't have to do all that again. I'm just, you know, I'm a little giddy right now that my team is undefeated and in first place, tied for first place in the NFL right now. I'm sure that's going to last all season long. But even more exciting than that is that, I mean, we're like 3 weeks away from NBA training camp, which, I mean, yeah. Gil even just said it to me right before we started. He's like, you know, I mean, the Celtics and Nuggets reports training camp on September 30th. And I look at the thing and I'm like, oh, it's September 10th. Like, that's only 20 days away. So, I mean, all of a sudden I got a big smile on my face because I'm like, this season is coming around the corner a lot quicker than I even thought it would.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's funny. So the Celtics and Nuggets, the last two champions at that, they are playing in the NBA International Series this year, headed out to Abu Dhabi, I believe, to play a couple games out there. So that's why they are allowed to convene for training camp before everybody else. And cool thing, too, we'll see media day, all of that stuff. That's when it really sets in for me, right? Like, when media day comes around, you see these guys in their uniforms. They've had some photo shoots or whatever, but, like, now you finally see everybody together in their practice facilities, and you hear guys answering questions. I'm sure we'll get some plenty of moments between LeBron James Sr. and LeBron James Jr. at Lakers training camp. A lot of stuff around the league. See Paul George in Philly, this, that, and the third, which will be exciting. We're also taking a quick pause from NBA Sound System next week. So by the time we're back, that Friday will be September 27th, and then we'll be 3 days away from NBA training camp. So time sure does fly, and it does help to have as busy of an offseason as we've had. Even though it hasn't seemed as eventful as other offseasons in the past, it's still been a busy one, and the Olympics helped out a lot with that. So this episode, we will talk about the NBA offseason that was. You know, I thought about it as I was preparing a little bit before this, and the free agency pod was a solo pod. So you and I never really got a chance to really talk about some of that stuff. When, you know, the Klay Thompson to Dallas, Paul George to Philadelphia. So if you remove the Olympics from it, which were awesome, we spent plenty of time talking about the Olympics, the 2024 NBA offseason, though not over just yet, how would you remember it?
How would I remember it? Oh, man. I mean, it's tough to summarize the NBA offseason without talking about the Olympics, just because of like how massive that was and the spectacle that ended up being with LeBron and KD and Steph all teaming up and getting the job done, especially in dramatic fashion. It was not easy. So, you know, I would almost say that it would be impossible to sum up the offseason without that. But, you know, I think that it was an offseason where, like, fans that weren't dialed into every single transaction the way that you and I are forced to be through our jobs and because of the love of the game, obviously. But, like, you know, we have to stay on top of that for our jobs. Like, I think there are going to be a lot of new faces and new places that make an impact that fans didn't even realize that, like, these players ended up there. And that's where I'm thinking about guys like Alex Caruso in OKC, guys like KCP in Orlando, you know, Isaiah Hartenstein also in Oklahoma City. You know, like, Mikal Bridges is obviously a big name, and him going to New York was a big deal, but, like, that's not like LeBron James getting traded. You know what I mean? Like, you know, like, people that follow the NBA know that move happened, but, like, I honestly think there are even casual fans that are going to watch opening night and be like, when did he get
there? Going there?
You know what I mean? Yeah. Right. So, like, I think it's like under the radar is maybe a term that I would use to, like, sum up this offseason, because, you know, you brought up Paul George going to Philly. Like, that's a big deal too. And he's someone that should be able to make a massive impact there as long as he can stay healthy. You know, stop me if you've heard that one before. But, you know, so there were a series of moves like that feel like, you know, when the season actually starts up and, like you said, media day, and you're starting to see pictures of these guys in new uniforms, Russell Westbrook on the Denver Nuggets is something that, like, my brain can't even process right now. But, you know, I expect him to make an impact there as well. So, like, there are all these moves that have happened that kind of feel like they flew under the radar. And I think the Olympics played a role in that, because, like, you know, free agency kind of happened. And then like before we knew it, like USA training camp was already here. They were already playing exhibition games and it was straight to it. So like, you know, I really do think that once the season actually starts, we're going to start to see some players make an impact in new places that kind of make people go, oh, when did that happen? Or how did they get him? Or like, what was that trade? Or what, you know, how much did he sign for? And, you know, I mean, that's one of the best parts of the new season. That's one of the best parts of, you know, watching preseason and kind of digesting that media day content to see who ended up where.
Yeah. And boring is not the right word because it wasn't a boring offseason and plenty of stuff happened and you and I were locked into it and, you know, reacted to it in a lot of ways. But like you said, what happened with the Olympics, what happened in Paris, what happened in the lead up to Paris was just so much more exciting in an offseason where there weren't that many, you know, all-star players and MVPs that moved on. Russell Westbrook is a former MVP. And it's funny, you mentioned him being in Denver and I started thinking about it. So I think about the number of former MVPs he's played with. He's played with KD, he's played with James Harden, he's played with LeBron, now he's played with Jokic. I might be overlooking somebody that he's played with in his NBA career, but he's played with quite a few of the active MVPs in the league. But you know, thinking about Paul George and on the flip side too, right? Not only Paul George going to Philly, what that means for Philly, but what that also means for the team that he left, how the Clippers are going to pick up, you know, the pieces, how the Warriors are going to pick up the pieces after losing Klay Thompson and Chris Paul and Harrison Barnes going to San Antonio. So many things that I think people are probably starting to realize as they pick up NBA 2K to see who's on teams now when they're playing with teams. You're really going to realize when the season gets going and gets underway. When I think about the Knicks move, right, we talked a lot about that and what they did. Like, everybody is gunning for the defending champions. So, you know, the Knicks and loading up on wings to go at a team that is built around two of the NBA's best wings, arguably the best wing duo in the NBA, and Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum. So thinking about all that stuff, thinking about teams who have doubled down on rebuilds, thinking about teams with new coaches, right, like, you know, Charlotte, Cleveland, Detroit. You know, these teams who are trying to do things, and a lot of stuff is going to look a little bit different in the margins next season. I think that's kind of the way that I'll look back at this offseason, because nothing really jumps off the page at you, but the landscape of the league, as it does every offseason, has changed a lot. And I think the biggest one for me that's probably not really going to set in, even though we've talked about it a lot of times and like seeing the guys react about it and talk about it, is Klay Thompson not being a Warrior anymore. You know, it was crazy to see, I think a few days before we sat down to record this, Steph Curry was at the New York Liberty game and Klay Thompson was there with Derek Lively. And Steph was like, looking at him like, man, like, it's not my teammate anymore. Like, you're with your Mavericks teammate. So, you know, watching the Warriors, and I know we went two seasons without seeing Klay on the court with them because of his injuries. But when I see him wear 31 for the Mavericks and you know, standing next to Luka and Kyrie, that'll be probably the weirdest thing and the biggest thing from this offseason. Not the biggest move, but just like the most jarring thing that I'll look back at the 2024 offseason as the breakup of the Splash Brothers. And as we mentioned, the corresponding move to bring Buddy Hield out to the Bay. So, yeah, a lot of stuff in the margins this offseason.
Yeah, I think, you know, I already just said it, but like trying to imagine Russell Westbrook in a Nuggets uniform is kind of breaking my brain. And like, you know, there's a lot of people that feel like Russell Westbrook has nothing left to give, that he, you know, is kind of, I mean, obviously he's past his prime at this point, but like, you know, people focus on the negatives, the turnovers, the jump shots, things like that. But like, at the end of the day, he's a high energy guy. Who was once a walking triple double. They have the two all time active triple double leaders on the same team with him and Jokic. And just knowing that, like, you know, that backup guard is a role they had to fill after they traded Reggie Jackson. So like, you know, he's someone that is not only going to go to Denver, he's not just going to be a cheerleader on the sidelines. Like, he is someone who is going to play and play probably a lot, especially when you consider Jamal Murray's status. And I know we're going to get into his new contract in a little bit, but like, when you consider Jamal Murray's status and like, you know, how he frequently has to take nights off due to injury and things like that, just, you know, for load management purposes. And like, those are nights where all of a sudden Russell Westbrook is the starting point guard for the team that won the NBA championship 2 years ago. And a lot of people feel like they are a team that, and, you know, I don't know if I would put myself in this group just yet. I haven't really thought about, like, you know, who's going to come out of which conference this upcoming season. We're going to do a whole pod on that, I'm sure. But like, you know, it's a team that a lot of people thought was going to go to the NBA finals again last year, came up short, but there's no reason to believe why they can't do it again this year. So like, get back there this year. So like, he's going to be playing a major role for a team that has championship aspirations. And like, I mean, you know me, I'm a massive Russell Westbrook fan. I always have been. He's someone that gives it 110% every time he's out there. You know, he wants to play winning basketball. At least, you know, it feels like he wants to play winning basketball at this stage in his career and kind of put personal goals aside to do whatever it takes to get that elusive championship. And, you know, I'm very much looking forward to seeing how he executes that on this Nuggets team, where he's going to have to play a very specific, high energy, kind of playmaking, defensive minded type role. But, you know, another player that, like, it's going to be weird to see at first, and it's going to be one of those things like, oh, is he really there? And you mentioned this as well, like Chris Paul in San Antonio, mm-hmm. and how much does he have left to give, and how much, you know, can he kind of mentor Victor Wembanyama in the young pieces on that Spurs team to try and build a winning culture there? And Harrison Barnes is going to play a role in that as well. But, like, you know, these are teams that, like, I'm interested in teams like San Antonio. I'm interested in teams like Detroit. Like, who are the teams at the bottom of the standings that should take a step forward this year and kind of make a little bit more noise and try and get into that play-in tournament range? And can they actually, you know, execute and do that? San Antonio is a team that you and I think are both probably going to pick to be in that top 10 to finish as a play-in tournament team, because we are both so high on Victor Wembanyama. But, like, Chris Paul is going to have a massive role in that. So, you know, seeing where these veterans, how they've moved around and how they're going to impact new franchises is going to be one of the biggest storylines of the entire 2024-25 season, in my opinion.
Yeah, yeah. Now, one quick note, shout out to Keldon Johnson for switching to number zero so Chris Paul can get back to wearing number three in San Antonio. Would it look weird at this point if you wore anything other than number three? Which brings me to the second point. I was thinking about him, you know, so much we talked about it. And I know that LeBron is just on a different level than anybody we've ever seen, but talk about giving flowers, man. This is me even just taking a step back from being a Chris Paul fan since the days at Wake Forest. This is year 20 for him. And for a player who, you know, around 6 foot tall, you know, had a people don't really talk about this that much, had a pretty serious knee injury early in his career that kind of altered the way that he relied upon his athleticism to be playing as effective as he's played for 20 years now, since the 2005-2006 season. It's pretty crazy, and it'll be cool to see, you know, him kind of take on whatever role he's going to take with San Antonio and how that's going to allow Victor Wembanyama to grow and exponentially, probably. And of anybody, I know people talk a lot about Chris Paul, the type of teammate he is, and not necessarily in a bad way, but, you know, he tends to say a lot. I think Victor Wembanyama is going to be very responsive to that, and I think that Greg Popovich will be able to kind of channel that as well, and Chris Paul will be kind of a player coach in that situation. You know, we didn't even talk about, you know, DeMar DeRozan, Sacramento. I know we talked about that before. We said it'll be a fun team on 2K, but that's another team, like, so many things. DeJounte Murray in New Orleans, which people have kind of had mixed reviews about. Like, so many things, again, have, you know, these aren't small moves, right? They're not seismic moves, but they're not small moves that are going to alter the way things are. And these are teams that were competing for play-in tournament spots, competing for play-ins, playoff spots last year. And it just all makes for a lot. One last thing, and you foreshadowed it a little bit. We could talk a little bit more about it out of the break. But, you know, it happens so often now, and it is the nature of the business. When guys take care of business, they get paid. Scottie Barnes got paid this offseason. Franz Wagner got paid this offseason. The guys from the 2021 draft class that have been taking care of business got paid this offseason, their first big contract extension. And you foreshadowed a little bit with Jamal Murray and his big contract extension that keeps him in Denver for the foreseeable future. And like you said, that means a lot about them and the Nuggets moving forward. So we'll talk about that, and we'll talk about some of the other young guys. And we'll talk a little bit about the WNBA playoffs, even though the picture is not crystal clear just yet. We come back from a quick break. All right, now we talked about plenty of the guys who got paid, and rightly so. The big one that most recently was Jamal Murray, 4 years, $208 million. And I do have questions about what you think that means for Denver. Before we get to that, also, Steph Curry, 1 year, $62.5 million, tacked on to the contract that he currently has. So, you know, for those who have pipe dreams, it kind of seems like he's going to retire a Warrior. But stranger things have happened. LeBron James figured out his contract situation. Obviously, we know he wasn't going to go anywhere if he gets a chance to play alongside his son with the Lakers. So first, I guess, thoughts on Steph getting what he got, and then we can talk a little bit about Jamal Murray, because I've heard some people and I've seen some people have some really negative reactions to it. Not necessarily negative toward Jamal Murray specifically, I think it's more concerned about what we saw during the playoffs and during the Olympics. And I'm just getting into it straight up. But the Nuggets title window. But before we talk about the Nuggets title window, Steph Curry, and kind of what you're expecting from the Warriors, because I think their fans are also being really negative about what's going on and the outlook for the upcoming season for Golden State. And Steph has signed up for more of it.
It's funny, like right after that deal happened, my dad had texted me and my brother in a group chat and was like, $62.5 million for 1 year. Like, I should have had you guys working on your jump shots way more. And I'm like, damn, how is my jumper catching a stray right now when Steph Curry signed a $62 million deal? Like, come on, Terry. But yeah, so I had to shake that one off real quick and then, you know, write something over at the Sporting News on Steph Curry's contract details and why I'm not a good enough shooter to earn that type of money. But you know, that feels like, you know, it's just business as usual, right? Like there are a little bit of rumors bubbling up like, oh, are LeBron and Steph going to team up after the Olympics and like everything like that. And it's like, yeah, it's a cute story, but like at the end of the day, Steph is, you know, I hate to crush your potential hopes on his eventual homecoming to Charlotte. Oh, and I'm not saying that it's never going to happen, maybe at the very back end of his career, because he has entertained the idea of that before, but like, come on, he's a Warrior for life. And like this contract extension felt like, you know, that was them committing to Steph Curry for the rest of his career. Even though it was only a 1 year deal, it felt like that was kind of their way of being like, hey, we are going to tack on this extra year of the extension, which was the most amount of money that they could give him in that extra 1 year extension. And you know, it'll be interesting to see how they try and craft this team around him to keep that title window open, because they do still have young pieces that other teams are intrigued by. You know, it seems like Jonathan Kuminga is someone that has basically been off the table. They have not been willing to trade him. Brandon Podchemski is another player who seems like he was kind of picking up some steam in trade rumors this offseason, but the Warriors never really wanted to part ways with him. I mean, they still have guys like Moses Moody, who I think, you know, is a player that I don't know if it's just Warriors lore or if, you know, it's on-court production in the limited minutes that he's gotten or whatever it is. But like, that's another player that I feel like teams would be more than willing to roll the dice on if the Warriors can find a trade suitor for, you know, a more veteran caliber win now type player. So, you know, the contract makes a ton of sense. I don't think anybody's going to argue that Steph Curry isn't worth that money. Now the question just becomes like, what are they going to do to actually like make the most of that, the time that they have left with Steph Curry for however long that is, for however much longer he wants to play. And that's the, you know, something that I'm curious to see this year, because, you know, they won the championship in 2022. I'm not going to call it forever in a bottle. It does feel like forever ago. And I'm not going to call it lightning in a bottle, because, you know, that is technically a part of the dynasty that they had built, you know, even going toe to toe with LeBron all those years and everything like that. Right. But like, you know, the last couple of years, last 2 years, like that has not been a title contending caliber team. I mean, Steph carried them out of the first round of the playoffs last 2 years ago. And, you know, obviously last year they missed out. So it's like, you know, what are they going to do to actually like, I understand they're trying to, you know, hit it right down the middle with playing for the future, but also playing for now. But like with a generational talent like Steph Curry, and if you're really going to get the most out of this contract and what he has left in the tank to offer, which is clearly more than I think people even realize with what he did at the Olympics this summer, like they have to get serious about trying to win now. And, you know, they're just going to have to worry about the future in the future.
Yeah. You're saying that I'm going to put you on a spot here. I'm not even putting you on a spot. Like I know the answer. I'm genuinely curious. I'm thinking about it because there is an example and it's not coming to me just yet, but like, of a team who's like, you know, we got these two timelines going on, and it would be really good if this young player makes the leap that we were expecting him to make. And then it like speeds everything up. And it feels like that is what they're banking on, whether it's Moody, whether it's Kuminga is a guy I think they're banking on making that jump. And he showed flashes this past year, like you said. But I'm curious, like, and maybe it comes to you quicker than it comes to me, because I feel like there's been a fairly recent example of a team, and honestly one example might be the Raptors and Pascal Siakam, right? Like I'm sure there was times, you know, with that 2019 championship team where coming into that year people were like, okay, you got Kawhi and Kyle Lowry and but what else? And then Pascal Siakam ended up making that leap and, you know, being the most improved player. And I guess you can go back and look at the guys who rightly earned most improved player and they fit that bill. But I asked that question and I phrased it that way to say like are the Warriors banking on something that's actually realistic? If Jonathan Kuminga jumps into becomes the player that we anticipated him being because you were high on him coming into that NBA draft, and he's shown flashes. Like I said, this is not even anything against him. But if he jumps into being the peak of that player, can he be the second best player on a 45, 48, 50, 52 win team? Like, what does that even look like? And do you think that that's what they should actually bank on?
Yeah, like, I don't know. Like, to answer your question directly, like, no, I don't really think it's realistic for them. Like, what they're hoping for of, like, middling these two timelines is not really realistic. Like, if they're willing to, or if they're not willing to part ways with guys like Kuminga, guys like Podziemski, Trayce Jackson-Davis is someone who I think probably would, you know, command a little bit of interest from other teams via trade. Again, Moses Moody bringing him up. Like, you know, they have guys like that that I think that they could get. You're not going to, you know, even packaging those guys, you're not going to get some superstar player out of thin air that fits perfectly with Steph Curry and all of a sudden makes his team a title contender again. But, like, you know, as long as they are not willing to part with those young guys who clearly at this stage of their careers are not good enough to be like the supporting cast of a Warriors team around Steph Curry that could win a title, then, like, you know, it's kind of like, what are they doing? You know what I mean? Like, all right, so they're just okay with being a 50 some odd win team that goes to the playoffs, maybe wins a playoff series, maybe doesn't, maybe gets to the second round of the playoffs, maybe makes a Western Conference Finals run if Steph really catches fire. But, like, are they really going to go toe to toe with, like, you know, Dallas or Denver or Oklahoma City and knock them off and get back to the NBA Finals and then, like, somehow beat the Celtics again, which, like, it's still crazy to even beat them in 2022 off of, like, you know, Steph's flurry in game 4. Like, it just feels like they are trying to do the impossible of maintaining what is going to happen post Steph Curry era while also trying to, like, give Steph justice for everything that he's done for them at this point, to this point in his career, and give him the money that he needs and, you know, make it seem like they're putting a contender around him when really, like, it's a team that, you know, is, I don't think either of us would say is a top 4 or 5 team in the Western Conference right now. So, you know, I'm sure Steph has had these conversations with the front office of, like, hey, what are we really doing here? And I'm sure he also understands from the business side of it of what they're trying to do in preserving the future. But at the same time, like, after you give him this extension, I am honestly in the camp that, like, why would Jonathan Kuminga be off limits? Why would Brandon Podziemski be off limits? Depending on the player that you get in return. I'm not saying just go fling those guys on the trade block and take the first rotational role player, you know, that comes your way. Like, obviously be patient and make sure you're getting the right package. But, like, you should be willing to part ways with either of those guys who I think are both very talented players. And I like what they do. I think they're well-rounded players who could complement a lot of different teams. But, like, just for the sake of Steph Curry, and we haven't even mentioned Draymond Green, like, obviously Draymond Green also in the back end of his career as well, like, you know, just go all in. Put your eggs all in this basket. I mean, the Warriors have proven that they're a competent franchise. Like, they can build it back up eventually. Yeah, there might be some dark years and stuff, but, like, you know, I have more faith in them building it back up and turning it around before, like, you know, the Pistons win a championship again. Like, honestly, like, it feels that way. So, you know, that's just kind of my two cents on it of, like, instead of trying to play it down the middle, like, it might just be time to put those young guys on the block, try and put some, you know, contender caliber pieces around Steph Curry and just see if he has another title push in him.
Yeah, I think that ultimately I lean on that side too. And I understand, you know, trying to have a contingency plan for when he ultimately does retire. He's not going to play forever. He's 36 years old. But at the same time, the whole reason that you push all your chips in every year you have Steph Curry is because he is a generational player. And as that term indicates, those don't come around that often. And that's not to say that other players that are on that roster are a dime a dozen, but you do everything that you can. And it was interesting. I know Draymond Green, I think he was on Jeff Teague's podcast when he was saying, you know, they came to me with this deal and I was like, yeah, it's good for me and Steph, but that's not good for, you know, the future of this franchise. And I appreciate the fact that they're thinking about that, but ultimately, you know, you would trade it all and push all the chips in to win one more in the next 3 or 4 years because you have a greater chance of doing that than these guys taking the torch on and, you know, kind of picking up where these guys are leaving off. As you were talking, I was brainstorming and trying to think of historical examples, and it's not even close to one for one considering era, considering level of talent. But I think about the Showtime Lakers and that they had, you know, Kareem was an older guy. He wasn't old when they drafted Magic Johnson, but Magic Johnson hit, James Worthy hit, Byron Scott hit. They had these young guys that kind of came along the way and chipped into that dynasty. I think, you know, I guess Kareem was, you know, early 30s, and then they got those guys. And that's something to do with trading and getting early draft picks, which the Warriors did a little bit too. But definitely not one for one, but certainly something worth considering if they can get those guys hit. But again, we're going into year five of these, some of these guys on that roster, and we kind of know what they have right now, or they've grown as much as they can in the role that they're in. That being said, I know you mentioned some of the teams in the Western Conference, and it's just so deep. You can ask me what 10 teams will be in the postseason today, and I'll probably give you a completely different answer tomorrow. But that brings me back to what was going on with the Nuggets. You know, you mentioned Kentavious Caldwell-Pope going to Orlando, and we talked about, you know, what that means for the other team. That means just as much for Denver as it means for Orlando. He was just a perfect player for them, and that means Christian Brown has to step up for Denver moving forward. And I saw some people say, man, it seems like the Nuggets title window is closed. I think that's dramatic. I think that's drastic. Anytime you have Nikola Jokic, you have a chance to win. But there seems like there are a lot of questions around them. We saw with the Bucks how hard it is to get back after getting there. And I'm curious if they find themselves in a similar position where they might have to pull off a blockbuster trade in a similar in the near future. I don't think either of us would have predicted the Bucks parting ways with Jrue Holiday, but they did it to get Damian Lillard. So where do you stand on the Nuggets? This is the offseason, so obviously a lot can change. We got to see them lace them up and take the floor. But do you think that people are overreacting a little bit?
Yeah, I think so. And I feel like, you know, the Jamal Murray, like the, not that I saw a lot of hate about the contract that he got, but even like the little bit of hate that he got, I'm like, well, what? Like, they have to give him that money. And I'm not saying they have to give him that money as if they were, like, resentfully, like, oh, all right, yeah, I guess I'll give this guy a $200 million contract. Like, no, he earned that. Jamal Murray earned that. And, like, we've seen what he's capable of doing when he's healthy, and that is being good enough to be the second best player on a championship team. And even last year, I mean, obviously he struggled in the postseason aside from a couple big shots that he hit against the Lakers. We saw him struggle at the Olympics, although I don't put as much stock into that because I think that was more so just trying to figure out like a weird fit with him and Shea in the backcourt and what his role was on that team, things like that. Like that doesn't, I'm not as concerned about what we saw from him over the summer. I think he'll be completely fine back in his regular role with Denver this season. But, you know, you look at guys like him and Aaron Gordon and Nikola Jokic, and like that is kind of the core that they're like committed to right now, right? And it feels like, you know, that is a team that, like you said, they have the best player in the world, Nikola Jokic. They are going to be a threat to go to the NBA Finals and win the NBA Finals as long as Jokic is there. And Aaron Gordon is a great complimentary piece next to him. And Jamal Murray, him and Jamal Murray are, you know, one of the best 1-2 combos in the NBA. So they are still going to be a contender in that sense. But like, they are no longer unbeatable the way that they had looked at times during the regular season last year and during their championship run in 2023. Like, there were moments where it's like, okay, like, how are you supposed to stop this Nikola Jokic, like, Aaron Gordon 1-2 high-low game? Because if you double Jokic, he's going to find AG cutting to the rim for an easy lob. Or how are you supposed to stop this pick-and-roll tandem between him and Jamal Murray when Murray is knocking down every single shot he takes with unlimited confidence? But, you know, if you put too much focus on him, he's going to hit Jokic, who can hit little teardrop floaters or just bully you back through the stanchion and get an easy layup. Like, they had looked like a well-oiled machine for the greater majority of the last two seasons. But now, like, you're looking at other teams that have gotten better to beat them. You talked about how, you know, the Celtics have a target on their back, or they're going to have the red dot between their four eyes, however, you know, however Joe Mazzulla wants to phrase it. But, like, you know, the Nuggets were the same way in the West. Like, teams are like, all right, well, like, the Timberwolves are like, we have to build a team to stop them. And they did. They had got two bigs and went out there and beat them to get to the Western Conference Finals last year. And like, that's a team that's not going away either. And like, Anthony Edwards is only getting better. Luka Doncic is only getting better. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is only getting better. And I'm not saying that Jokic is plateaued. I'm just saying that these other teams around them have gotten better, where the Nuggets are not a better team. I don't think anybody would argue the Denver Nuggets are not a better team right now than they were 2 years ago when they won the NBA championship. That to me is a fact. Like, that is almost, you know, objective, not subjective. So like, you know, where are they going to find moves within the margins to get KCP caliber role players that they had let go over the last couple of years? You know, guys like Bruce Brown that they let walk over the last couple of years to try and save a couple bucks. Like, you know, where are they going to find assets to either trade to get guys in return, or maybe it happens in free agency next offseason? Like, I don't know what their cap table looks like right now, but like, to me, like, that is the major question in Denver. It's not about Jamal Murray. It's not about Nikola Jokic. It's not about Aaron Gordon. It's about what can the front office do to put the right pieces around them to get them, I don't want to say back into the contender status because they're obviously still there, but like, you know, to kind of solidify their spot as being the best team in the Western Conference again.
No, 100%. And I think that they are banking a lot on, like, you know, Peyton Watson got better, Zeke Nagy got better, you know, but it's a lot to ask of those guys. And it's a lot to ask of Nikola Jokic because there's this big thing about he makes everybody around him better, which is true. But as we've seen in the past, I'm thinking like late 2000s Cavs. You lean so much on your generational talent being so generational that he makes everybody around them better. Sometimes you make cut corners in team building, roster building. And the other thing that they've, like you mentioned with KCP and Bruce Brown, you have guys that, you know, star in their role so well that you can't afford them anymore. So it's a good problem to have in that moment, but now you kind of have to, you reel once those guys move on. So I guess the biggest thing is Raptors fans maybe think about who you might want off that Nuggets roster if the Nuggets were trying to get Bruce Brown back and run it back in a roundabout way. So we'll definitely see. I know we mentioned Scottie Barnes getting paid this offseason, and Emmanuel quickly also got paid. We talked about it throughout this offseason. That is the duo of the future for the Raptors franchise, along with, you know, Grady Dick and the other guys on that team. And we'll talk a lot more about the Raptors as they get going in the season nears. As I mentioned before, we're going to take a brief pause and then get back to it on NBA Sound System. Before you know it, we'll be talking about preseason action and media day photos and everything. The NBA season really is around the corner, and it's a great feeling. Thanks again for tuning in to this week's edition of NBA Sound System. Please make sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcast. Share it with a friend, and we will get them right into your feed every week. For Kyle Irving, my name is Gil McGregor. We will catch you back here, not next week, but the week after on NBA Sound System.